Monday, July 8th. Today in Europe, more German air raids on the British Isles and more British raids on German and German-occupied territory. The British reportedly believe the attempted German-Italian invasion of the Isles is at hand. The German press says the Axis powers are taking the conquest of Britain for granted, and that Adolf Hitler and Italian Foreign Minister Campuzano have talked about post-war Europe in their Berlin conference. But now the news direct, London and Berlin, and then a report from our own national capital. First, for the report from the British capital by Edward R. Murrow. Go ahead, London.
This is London. During the night and in full daylight this morning, German planes again made isolated attacks on England. This morning, they repeated their raid near a town where a number of people were killed and injured yesterday. Relatively, however, there was little German air activity over England this weekend. Bombs were reported at only a few points by the air ministry. Apparently, a number of German planes were attacked before they reached England, since three British fighters have failed to return. It is claimed that seven German planes were shot out of the sky. This includes four German fighters. It is not established whether these fighters were escorting German bombers or on a special photographic mission of their own. Delayed action bombs were dropped in one district. These do not explode until from 1 to 4 days have elapsed. They're designed to penetrate deeply and destroy water mains to make firefighting difficult. Now, they're also used to attack airfields in the hope that they will remain undiscovered and later destroy aircraft which were dispersed or in the air during the actual raid. Lord Beaverbrook, Minister of Aircraft Production, announced that during June, British aircraft production hit a new high. He said the total aircraft doubled the number produced in June last year. Meantime, official records claim that since the start of the war, Germany has lost almost 2,500 aircraft through British effort alone. A dispatch from Malta states that the enemy has lost 5 planes in heavy raids since 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. The raids are said to have stopped at 10 o'clock this morning. When an alliance breaks up, the ground for mutual recriminations are almost unlimited. Today, the British press explains at length why the Allied armies failed to close the gap made by the Germans after the Battle of the Meuse. The British explanation is, in a word, that the French left the British army to attack alone. The full story of this action is something that won't be told for many years. But probably a more serious aspect of the collapse of the Anglo-French alliance is to be found in the fact that the French are in possession of an uncomfortable number of British military and naval secrets. Although the Pétain government declared on Friday that they had severed all ties with Great Britain, official circles in London still maintain that they have received no formal notification of the severance of diplomatic relations. The absence of such formal notification would seem to be only a detail, since the French Ministry of Marine has announced that 2 naval air squadrons, which were being demobilized, were rearmed and used to bomb British vessels anchored at Gibraltar. The notification that's missing would seem to be a declaration of war rather than the severance of diplomatic relations. On the home front, the discussion of Mr. Chamberlain's position in the government continues. The British Institute of Public Opinion announces the result of a poll this morning. A cross-section of British voters were asked, "Do you think that Mr. Chamberlain, Sir John Simon, Sir Kingsley Wood, and Lord Halifax should be dropped from the government, or are you in favor of their remaining?" 77% wanted Mr. Chamberlain to go. 63% expressed a desire that Sir John Simon should leave the government. 57% were against Lord Halifax, while 55% expressed a desire that Sir Kingsley Wood, former Air Minister, now Chancellor of the Exchequer, should leave the government. Those who want to oust Mr. Chamberlain admit that he is still the leader of the largest party in the House of Commons, and that if he were to appeal to his friends, he could rally a very sizable block of votes. But his opponents say that this House of Commons, which has been sitting for nearly 5 years, is not an accurate reflection of public opinion. And so the argument continues. Mr. Geoffrey Shakespeare, the man in charge of Britain's children's evacuation scheme, has appealed to the United States to relax its regulations so as to permit a speed-up in the flow of children from this country to America. There seems to be plenty of red tape on both sides of the Atlantic. So far as I can learn, people with money and influence have been the most successful in sending their children out of the country. As one working-class father said to me the other day, "Unless something is done to speed up this business, the children are going to be too old and feeble to travel by the time arrangements are made for them to leave this country." I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Now here's the latest news from the Balkans. Romania's new premier, Jucatu, conferred in Bucharest today with the Italian ambassador. Dispatches report the belief that they discussed Hungarian claims upon Romania for the return of Transylvania to Hungary. And a dispatch from New Delhi, India, says the Working Committee of the Indian Nationalist Congress adopted a resolution demanding immediate and complete independence for India. Now we've received the news from London. In just a moment, we take you to the German capital for the report of our correspondent there. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. I've been away for a week in Switzerland. I arrived back here an hour ago, grabbing the morning newspapers at the station to see what was going on and to prepare this talk. Reading them on the way to the studio here gave one a curious sensation. You see, I left Berlin before the affair at Oran. In Paris, 2 weeks ago, I had noticed that the two French newspapers still being published there under the German occupation had taken an anti-English line, but they were not quoted in the Berlin press, at least then. Then came the shooting at Oran, the pronouncements of the Vichy government against London. Now, the Berlin papers this morning concentrate almost entirely on news from French sources. And this French news is devoted to items for the most part against England. Hence the fact that for me, after a short absence, the Berlin papers this morning have an unfamiliar sight. Leading story in the BZ, for instance, is a half-hour statement from Vichy about the French warships seized by the British at Plymouth, Portsmouth, and Southampton. Havas is quoted here in Berlin as saying that the French Admiral de Villene, in command of the French fleet in British waters, was arrested by English naval authorities. Havas also mentions dead and wounded in the struggle, it says, ensued before the French resistance was overpowered. This Havas report is a leading story on page one of the BZ. I turn to the Montag's post and find big headlines reading as follows. General Hunziker lashes Knickerbocker. And under the headlines, a statement given out by the French general who signed the armistice and who is now at Wiesbaden in Germany, where the armistice commission meets. General Hunziker denies that Germany asked France to surrender her fleet and denies that the Germans threatened to send the women relatives of French naval men to a concentration camp unless the fleet was surrendered. A similar denial attributed to the French government is also published in the German press, which then goes on to attack Mr. Knickerbocker, to whom it refers always as the Jew Knickerbocker. What a change has come over Europe in a few weeks. Knickerbocker, who only a short time ago was the darling of the French government, now being sharply taken to task by the government of France. But of course, these changes hit you in the eye every time you pick up a newspaper over here. There's a Havas report published in my Berlin newspaper this morning saying that the French government at Vichy is planning to make France something like a totalitarian state, and that Mr. Levin is taking the initiative in doing away with the parliamentarian form of government in France. I heard that in Geneva last week, direct from Vichy, but here we have it confirmed in the German press. This dispatch says that Levin has taken the initiative in getting a national assembly to drop the parliamentarian form of government and giving Marshal Pétain the powers to proclaim a new constitution. France must, says this dispatch, make its form of government more closely resemble those of the other totalitarian governments so that a normal cooperation may be forthcoming. The new French constitution must not be a copy, but must take into account French character, unquote. And finally discloses this Havas dispatch, quote, the reform will be marked by the disappearance of political parties and the building up of one single party, unquote. France, then, it would appear from this, is to go totalitarian, too. As for the other items here in Berlin, Count Chano, who had a long talk with Herr Hitler yesterday, is today visiting battle scenes on the Western Front. He'll spend 2 days doing this and then return to Berlin Wednesday for further political talks. Today's army communique just out tells of further German air attacks on Great Britain. Bombs were dropped, say the Germans, on the Isle of Wight, Falmouth, and Newcastle. British air attacks again took place over Western Germany. They caused small damage, says the German High Command report. This is William L. Shirer in Berlin, returning now to Columbia, New York.
And from New York, we switch you now to our own nation's capital and the news reported by Albert Warner. We take you now to Washington.
For the moment, it is domestic, not foreign news, which takes attention here. Wendell Willkie, the Republican nominee for president, arrives in Washington this afternoon for his first meeting with his running mate, Senator Charles L. McNary of Oregon. It will be a study in contrast. There will be Mr. Willkie, big-shouldered, energetic, eloquent of voice, expansive of gesture, a businessman. And shaking hands with him, there will be the other half of the ticket, the Republican leader of the Senate, a man of average stature, quiet, He rarely speaks in the Senate except in connection with rules or procedure or to defend the parliamentary rights of his party colleagues. More interested in agriculture than industry. A politician and a shrewd one. McNary does his work behind the scenes. The Democrats are trying to draw a contrast between these gentlemen and other more fundamental matters. Charles Michelson, the Democratic publicity chief, says McNary's record is opposed to everything Wilkie has stood for. McNary was enthusiastic for the TVA and the power control it typified, says Michelson. Wilkie, he says, fought the TVA with all the force at his command. Wilkie was stridently in favor of the Hull reciprocity enactments, and in fact of nearly all of the Roosevelt policies, says Michelson. McNary was against the trade pacts. Wilkie favored the administration defense measures. McNary was a near isolationist. So speaks the astute and sharp-tongued Democrat, Mr. Michelson. Well, Republicans have not bothered to reply openly. Probably they would insist that on essentials of governmental policy and economic opinion, Wilkie and McNary are rather well agreed. A Republican on Capitol Hill suggested to me that the two running mates may have pursued somewhat different courses before they met and got together. But, he said, President Roosevelt and Vice President Garner pursued different courses after they got together and were elected. Anyhow, whatever the president told Postmaster General Farley yesterday about running or not running for a third term, a presidential headquarters is being opened for Cactus Jack Garner in Chicago a full week before the Democratic convention opens. The campaign signs at his headquarters read, "Go with Garner." Republicans who argue that the New Dealers have fixed it to draft Mr. Roosevelt for a third term and to ditch Mr. Garner and get him out of Washington say this language on the campaign signs is too prophetic. Go with Garner. Today, the Senate considers the nomination of Henry L. Stimson to be Secretary of War and Frank Knox to be Secretary of the Navy. There will be isolationists ready to accuse them of being interventionists. Democratic Senator Wheeler, Republican Senators Vandenberg and Nye, and others will criticize the president for adding these particular Republicans to his cabinet. But a Senate majority will nevertheless confirm Stimson and Knox. Coming this week is a presidential request for another $5 billion for the Army and Navy. The Army will send its own recommendations for universal training to Congress, probably tomorrow. Representative Jack Dempsey of New Mexico, who is something of a miracle man when it comes to piloting ticklish bills through the House, will have his inning Tuesday. His pet project, the Hatch Bill, many times near death and just as often revived by Dempsey, will finally come before the House. This is the bill to apply a ban on political activity to state and local government workers paid with federal funds. The bill would prevent single campaign contributions in excess of $5,000. Now, the politicians of both parties are not too fond of this Hatch Bill, but the $5,000 limitation may save it. It's hard to explain opposition to a bill which stops big contributions, hard as the result may be on party treasurers. We return you now to New York.
And with this news from Washington, we conclude this morning's report of national and international developments, which comes to you each morning at this time and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. We listen to Edward R. Murrow reporting from London, William L. Shira from Berlin, and Albert Warner, who just concluded his remarks from Washington. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.